Coming to you live from the basement of an abandoned house in the middle of a field, it's the Derek Izzy Show. Making history his story, Derek Izzy.
You're listening to the Derek Izzy Show. Welcome back for another month of this great podcast. Get ready to be scared. But before you get scared, go to the swag store, buy some stuff. Promo code IZZY10, IZZY10, gets you 10% off any of the Derek Izzy Show merchandise. Check it out. Order something. Because if you don't, the topic of our podcast will come and kill you. Born on April 12th, 1973, the topic of our podcast hails from Oklahoma. From a family of two boys, he was the older brother, and his parents were divorced. His mom married a carpenter, and his family life was fairly stable. The topic of our podcast did enjoy working in his father's wood shop, but he would start to show signs of antisocial and aggressive behavior. Neighbors would start to avoid him. He started giving up on his subjects in school. This led him to lose interest and to start getting into drugs and alcohol. The drugs and alcohol would be too much to continue through school, and he would be expelled. Getting expelled from school, you can imagine what that did to his family life. His parents were not pleased. Now, he was expelled in 1991. One of the incidents that I'd like to call out happened a year before that. Some of his antisocial behavior would turn into rage. There was a fight where the topic of our podcast was beating the crap out of another kid. The boy's mother stepped in to try and protect her son from getting beaten. So the topic of our podcast beat the crap out of her as well. This would lead to charges of assault, but he was able to talk the victims out of pressing charges. He was definitely an enigma at such a young age. He was very charismatic and had the ability to influence people, while at the same time being a social outcast. This would be the start of the chaos in his life. A year after being expelled from school, we're now in 1992, and the topic of our podcast would move out. He found a girlfriend. He thought he was in love. They moved right next door to someone he had gone to school with. While professing to be in love with this girl, they had a very tumultuous relationship. In fact, the police were called several times. The neighbors would recount hearing the woman scream on multiple occasions. The cops would show up, but nothing would happen. But this pattern of violence would not stop. The next door neighbors, Justin and Jennifer, well, they would get married. One day, Justin was waiting for Jennifer to bring him lunch. She used to bring him lunch at work sometimes. But this time, she didn't show up. Justin started to get worried, and he headed home just to check on her, make sure everything was okay. And he found her lying on the kitchen floor, covered in blood. Multiple stab wounds. She was dead. There were no suspects in this horrific crime. Now, the topic of our podcast, while he did live next door, he had no motive or anything, so he wasn't really a suspect, but he continued to develop an extensive police records because of his domestic violence and his drug and alcohol abuse. The topic of our podcast would move on to meet another woman. He complained to her about how he was falsely accused by the police so many times, and she started to feel bad for him. He was seemed very caring, and I talked about his charisma before. and she fell for him. The feelings that she had for him and how everyone was against him and she needed to protect him. One of the ways she felt would be a good way to protect him would be giving him a fresh start. She gave him her son's birth certificate and social security card so he could start a brand new identity. And that's exactly what the topic of our podcast did. Welcome to the beginning of the life of John Paul Chapman. Between the year 2000 and 2003, he was pretty much a vagrant. He would just travel from town to town, taking odd jobs, and he was difficult to trace, but he seemed to have run-ins with the law everywhere he went. In fact, in October of 2003, police arrested him for disorderly conduct, and his fingerprints were run through the national database. Now, he had committed many, many crimes before the fingerprints had been checked. But when they ran the check, he had no record and no prints on file. So they let him go. Soon after he was released, he reunited with an old girlfriend, started working again, and then continued to get arrested. This time for drug possession. But that was his cue to kind of head to the Mobile, Alabama area. In February of 2004, in New Orleans, the body of Catherine Collins was discovered. On March 12th of 2004, in Douglasville, Georgia, the body of Amanda Greenwell was discovered. Bodies continued to pop up. As John Paul Chapman was questioned about these bodies, he was more than happy to admit to murdering these victims. You'll remember from a previous podcast, Murdered and Missing in Oklahoma, Ashley Freeman and Lori Bible. Well, the topic of our podcast actually admitted to killing them as well. He actually knew some details about the home where they were kidnapped from. But when he gave details about where he claimed to have disposed of their bodies, the bodies were not there, and they figured he was just trying to get attention. He didn't actually murder the girls. But being his charismatic self, John Paul Chapman would admit to a lot more murder than he actually committed. Authorities realized he was just trying to make a name for himself, and they started to doubt the truth behind his admissions. He was suspected in several rapes in Missouri and Oklahoma. The year is 2004. Hurricane Ivan would strike through the Gulf Coast. In Mobile, Alabama, an area that was especially hit hard by the hurricane, they were preparing for the upcoming storm. John Paul Chapman would find work. He was working for Mark and Kim Bentley. He had done some quality work for them in the past, and they were thankful. They gave him a place to stay, and they gave him a steady job. They lived in a mobile home, and they allowed John Paul Chapman to stay there, as well as their cousin. And this would give them a safe place to stay until the hurricane passed through. It was a Thursday night, and our John Paul Chapman was looking for a radio and a flashlight because the storm had officially hit their area. Kim told him, "Radio's in the bedroom closet, but tell our cousin to go look for it." She didn't really want John Paul Chapman digging through their closet. But he ignored her advice, and he went to the closet. While digging through that closet, he found a .25 caliber handgun. He would hide this gun on his person, and they would ride out the storm. John Paul Chapman would have some questions for the family. They would go outside, check out the damage to the property, making sure everything was okay. There was a lot of cleanup to do after the storm. And that's exactly what John Paul Chapman was doing. He helped them get the entire area cleaned up. The family really enjoyed having him around. They even went and bought him beer after helping them clean up the yard at the home. Seemed like everything was going to be okay. Now, after the storm, a lot of the businesses were closed down. In fact, there was only one restaurant that was open in the area, and they were hungry. So while some of the family went out to get food, our John Paul Chapman was left alone. This was his chance. While left alone, he would take that gun and he would end the life of Lisa, who was a neighbor of the family. A single woman, he would rape her and shoot her in the head 3 times, killing her. Next, he would go and retrieve some gasoline and set her body on fire. Probably having never done this before, he was not prepared for the explosion that happened that alerted all the neighbors. John Paul Chapman would return to the house of the family that had taken him in. They smelled the gasoline on him, and they asked him about it. He told them he was putting gas in one of the four-wheelers and just decided to go for a ride at night, kind of relax and clear his mind. But on the next day, when Lisa did not show up for work, an investigation started. The family that John was staying with would get involved now. The police were called, and they would investigate. An autopsy was performed. That's where they discovered the 3 gunshots to her head. This was now a murder investigation. The trial would last an entire week, where John Paul Chapman would confess that he raped and murdered Lisa. But he also said he was high on meth at the time. Some of the other confessions included Tina Mayberry, who was attacked in Douglasville, Georgia, Catherine Collins in New Orleans, Cumming, Georgia, Patrice Endress. The confessions would continue to come. And on December 1st, 2005, the jury would sentence the topic of our podcast to death. At the time of this podcast, he was still on death row. And there may be more murders out there that he has not been convicted of that he took part in. But with all the drugs he did and the alcohol abuse, his memory does not recall enough detail. One of the biggest failures during the investigation was the analysis of the fingerprints. This was a big failure for the FBI. Now, typically, fingerprint analysis is extremely accurate, but it's not perfect. Basically, when they ran the test, the detectives sent out a national teletype just in case John Paul Chapman was wanted in other states. The state of Missouri wrote back and they said John Paul Chapman, who also had the social security number they were looking for and the birth date they were looking for, had been in their prison since 1999. They included a photograph and a set of his fingerprints. But neither one of those matched the man who was in custody in Alabama. Now the police were perplexed. They had multiple people with the same identity, same social security number, but completely different people. The fingerprint analysis was not 100% accurate, and the introduction of computers to the fingerprint analysis was something that was new that still wasn't fully accepted as being accurate. So they had a serial killer on their hands, and they never knew it. After he was released from jail this time, he would continue to commit more murders until eventually being caught and sentenced to death. This charismatic serial killer, living under assumed names, traveling as a day laborer, raping and killing women all over the southeastern United States, confessing to murders he didn't commit, this John Paul Chapman was actually Jeremy Brian Jones. Jeremy Jones, the notorious serial killer, still on death row to this day, but managed to kill many more victims due to a glitch with the FBI's fingerprinting system. Because now you know the rest of the story. Thank you for listening to the Derek Izzy Show. Remember to take 10% off the swag store. Promo code Izzy10, IZZI10. And tune in next month where we give you a more lighthearted show. Good day.